This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like
no. It's good to see you all from this perspective. It's really interesting. It's been a really, really strong session. Pamela and I were talking about that. It was like from the first night, everybody just seemed to drop anchor. Everybody just seemed to just arrive very quickly and take up their positions. So I feel like we've settled into ourselves quite quickly. Or maybe we've settled into our self, the big S. Yeah. This is our Soto Zen way. Yeah. It's a very soft way. It's very soft and it's very wide. And there's something also funny happening that makes me feel that we might have our finger on the pulse or something, is that each one of the speakers, we keep kind of almost like bawling in front of the other, and we keep going, I was going to say that, or I was going to use that story, or that was my talk, which I'm enjoying a lot. So at the Zazen Kai, we talked about weeds, we talked about rivers, we talked about the body, talked about practice, the foundations of our practice. And I was thinking a lot about rivers and water. I was wondering if you can accept all those rivers as they flow in and out of your life. Be the ocean that accepts all rivers. Or as the Buddha said, and it has but one taste, salt, and that is the taste of liberation. So accepting all rivers that flow into you, or maybe that flow out of you. That's our practice, unifying everything. And also realizing that power in our own vast being. Just like the ocean, spread out, immensely still and immensely powerful. You can even hold boats aloft. You can breathe and crash waves. I think it's like that phrase we have in Zen, moment to moment, nonstop flow. But I also view my practice personally as something I'm absorbing. I was looking at my interpreter's tea across from me during lunch, and I'm looking at their tea bag, and I thought, that's me. It's an example that popped in my head, and maybe it doesn't quite make sense, but I think it does, maybe. We just let this water in. And we just make tea all around us. I think that's transmitting the light. A as we talked about earlier, with Suzuki Roshi saying, just shine one corner. What that means, what does that mean? What does that mean to you, to just shine one corner? I was reflecting on that phrase a lot recently in my personal life, because sometimes I get feeling overwhelmed. It mostly has to do with politics and social media, or anytime I delve into that world, I just can't. Whereas my other little nephew would say, I can't like that. I can't like that. So just shine one corner of the world. So I'm just trying to allow the practice to work on me and trust that I'll figure out the rest. So we can stop fighting with ourselves over it. Stop the fighting in our lives. And the same with our practice, you know. Just try to throw yourselves into it as completely as you can. And not trying to get anything back out of it. Just let it work on you. Until there's no you. No. Just be steeped in it. Yeah. Like Trader Joe's mint melange tea. Or whatever you were drinking. I'm not sure. Yeah, that? Okay, good. The nose knows. I'm just less and less and less getting in my own way. And I feel like if we can do that, we can learn to show up authentically in the moment as is needed. All that here and now stuff. I think that is transmitting the light. And we started really deep here together. I feel like we just kind of dropped in. And getting to see some of you for a practice discussion, I was hearing a lot of that reflected back at me. So yeah, let's go deep, and let's go deeper still. We've got a couple more days left. There's, I'm laughing at myself here because I'm thinking about the themes that are arising in the sesshin of water and weeds and light. Yeah, that seems about right. But I was guest teaching with another group, and one of the speakers used a phrase in Spanish, it's a Caribbean Spanish phrase, and it basically says, put all the meat on the grill. Don't hold anything back. This is the party. Put all the meat on the grill. Yeah? What a weird phrase for the middle of a session. But every time I bowed to my cushion, I was like, I'm hopping on the Barbie here. No, I was like, go for it. I don't want to hold anything back. I'm going to put it all there. I'm going to sweat it all out. It's something much prettier written than what I just said. So let's all go deep together and just let your zazen happen. Get out of the way and let it happen. And you'll see what's on the other side of your resistance. What's on the other side of the stories you tell yourself. Your practice will shift. If you just stop sitting zazen and let zazen sit zazen. Do you understand? Let zazen sit zazen. Get out of the way. Let the ginger tea serve itself. Let the flower on the altar bloom of itself. Invite that bell to ring. Let meditation meditate. This is transmitting the light. An old monk named Kodo said, meditation is just the self, selfing itself. Any clearer? Because that's transmitting the light. So I wanted to read a little section of the Zazen Yojinki. Some of us are probably familiar with the Fukan Zazengi, which is these, translated something like the universal recommendations or instructions on practicing Zazen, which was, you know, put forth by Dogen. So, yeah. But Keizan Joken Zenji also wrote something similar. So with Dogen being kind of the father of Soto Zen, Keizan is often called the mother, because he practiced it with a much softer style. So here is the first page of the Zazen Yojinki. Sitting is the way to clarify the ground of experiences and to rest at ease in your actual nature. This is called the display of the original face and revealing the landscape of the basic ground. Drop through this body and mind, and you will be far beyond such forms as sitting or lying down. Beyond considerations of good or bad, transcend any divisions between usual people and sages. Pass beyond the boundary between sentient beings and the Buddha. Put aside all concerns, shed all attachments. Do nothing at all. Don't fabricate anything with the six senses. Who is this? Its name is unknown. It cannot be called body. It cannot be called mind. Trying to think of it, the thought vanishes. Try to speak of it, words die. It's like a fool, an idiot. It is as high as a mountain, as deep as the ocean, without peak or depth. Its brilliance is unthinkable. It shows itself silently. Between sky and earth, only this whole body is seen. This one is without compare. He has completely died. Eyes clear, she stands nowhere. Where is there any dust? What can obstruct such a one? Clear water has no back or front. Space has no inside or outside. Completely clear, its own luminosity shines before form and emptiness were fabricated. Objects of mind and mind itself have no place to exist. I'm going to read that little part again. Completely clear, its own luminosity shines before form and emptiness were fabricated. Objects of mind and mind itself have no place to exist. This has always already been so, but it is still without a name. The great teacher, the third ancestor, Sen Kan, temporarily called it mind, and the venerable Nagarjuna once called it body, a enlightened essence and form giving rise to the bodies of all the Buddhas. It has no more or less about it. This is symbolized by the full moon, but it is this mind which is enlightenment itself. The luminosity of this mind shines throughout the past and brightens the present. Nagarjuna used this subtle symbol for the samadhi of all the Buddhas, but this mind is signless, non-dual, and differences between forms are only apparent. Just mind, just body. Difference and sameness miss the point. Body arises in mind, and when the body arises, they appear to be distinguished. When one wave arises, 1,000 waves follow. The moment a single mental fabrication arises, numberless things will appear. So the four elements and the five aggregates mesh. Four limbs and the five senses appear and on and on and on until the 36 body parts and the 12-fold chain of interdependent emergence. Once fabrication arises, it develops continuity, but it still only exists through the piling up of myriad dharmas. This mind is like ocean waters, the body like its waves. There are no waves without water and no water without waves. Water and waves are not separate. Motion and stillness are not different. So it is said a person comes and goes, lives and dies, in the imperishable body of the four elements and the five aggregates. Zazen is going right into the ocean of awareness, manifesting the body of all Buddhas. The natural luminosity of mind suddenly reveals itself, and the original light is everywhere. There's no increase or decrease in the ocean, and the waves never turn back. What do you think, huh? And that was just the first page. Maybe I'll print out the other pages and we'll pin them up on the bulletin board. Keizan Zenji. Huh? So yeah, sitting in that seat right there the other morning, facing inward and watching each of you drop through that body and mind into that vast ocean. As Pamela said, watching you shine that light, even though we don't see it. And I was thinking about that and how luminous you all were to me. And then I was looking at the actual sunlight scattering through the trees. And it left a shadow of Randy on the floor right in front of me, dancing and swaying the leaves and complicating his illusory form and body. It took 93 million miles to go from the sun to the spot in front of my cushion. Nearly 93 million miles to harmonize sun, Chikoji, Randy, ocean, the light, and the shadow. The shadow was transmitting the light. Dogen, when talking about this, used the image of the moon in a dewdrop. Right? We know this. And the moon is wisdom. We're talking about the finger pointing at the moon. We're talking about wisdom, you know? And the dewdrop, he picked something so ephemeral and so small. But he understood it, as small and as temporary as it was, it reflects the whole moon, just as it is. How could something so small, like dew, reflect something so deeply and so high? This is how Dogen was instructing us, that any being can embody and shine that wisdom forth and fill our worlds with light. And dewdrops don't discriminate. They form on every surface, every blade of grass. Your shoes left outside your door in the morning. The little turkey feathers that we find. Deer shit. Doesn't discriminate. It's on every surface. It's everywhere. In natural accordance, it's everywhere. This is our way. This is our Zen way. So our Zazen practice helps us see this, cultivate it maybe as the world, and manifest it to shine that light both inward and outward. Koban described this light and how in turning it inward, he was able to see his own inner landscape more clearly. He said it was dark but warm, like a fermented junkyard. I've never felt closer to the man. A fermented junkyard. I wanted to do that kanji and post it up somewhere, and everybody would say, oh, it's so beautiful. What does it say? Fermented junkyard. The words of our founder. Yeah. So keep on shining that light inward. Allow the situations of your life, both macro and micro, to be an upaya, to be a skillful means for us to wake up and to help others wake up. When you stop trying to escape it, when you stop trying to deny it, when you realize there's no place you can go, then you have nothing left to do but to work with it. I can't believe that 4 days ago I was sweating so hard on the cushion, and then this morning I was like almost teeth chattering. I guess welcome to Northern California, right? There's nowhere I could go. Just let it drip. Let it run down my spine. Let that light transmit right down my spine. Right into my cushion. Are you sure we want to keep swapping cushions when we do talks? Maybe we should. Yeah, but when you stop trying to escape it all the time, when you stop trying to deny it, you just face it. You just face it. And quite often you realize that you're the source of it too. Yeah, most of my problems at least. Luckily not all, you know, but sadly most. I always like to say when people say, oh, I'm stuck in traffic. No, you are traffic. You're in the middle of it too. You're contributing to all my problems. Oh, I'm stuck in traffic. Well, yeah, it's a funny thing to say, but you're in the middle of it. You're the common denominator. Yeah? This is your life. And it is also the transmission of the Buddha Dharma. right here, right now, ceaselessly. So stop waiting for your real life to begin is one of my big teachings, I think. Stop wishing for things to be different. This reality, this life, this crucible, this Zendo. And I think it will further shift and unfold for you when you start viewing your practice as something that you're not adding to your life, but your practice is your life and your life is your practice. Because it's not something out there. Or if I could leave my life behind, I could really practice. I did that for a really, really long time. So our life, our whole life, not our life as we want to see it or as we want it to be, and not just part of it, but our whole life. Everyday ordinary mind, right? We said that a lot in Zen. Everyday ordinary mind. Going a little further, our everyday ordinary mind. This one too. What's going on here? And it's now. And I have a responsibility. Whole moment Zen. All of it. Stop conceptualizing it. Stop putting it over there. It's right here, right now. And you turn that light inward, and it will shine outward. Just keep sitting. And don't separate. Milarepa said, in the wilderness cave, you have an open market where you can barter samsara for nirvana. In the monastery of your heart and body, is the temple where all Buddhas unite. In the wilderness cave. It's here. It's right here. You have an open market where you can barter samsara for nirvana. I don't know what the exchange rate is, but you can slowly make those shifts. Let it go, and in that open hand, you can receive it. This is the temple where all Buddhas unite. It's not out there. It's right here. So just pay attention and just keep showing up. There's another Zen text called Kajo. I quite like, and there's phrases when you read something that stick, and then you go back and reread it, and you're really just hunting for the phrases that you like at that point. At least that's what I do, trying to chase that first high maybe. And then the little lines I skipped over are allowed to arise sometimes. And one of those lines I was reading Kajo the other day, and it's this little line that I felt kind of like it was a throwaway line, or it didn't mean something to me, or didn't resonate. But it said, ordinary coarse tea and plain rice are the Buddha's thoughts and ancestors' places. Just notice that. Just notice how the well water at Jikoji tastes slightly different than the water back in the city. You know? Notice how the laundry dried on the line feels different than the laundry from the machine. That's Buddha action there. That's Milarepa, Keizan Zenji. It's the ancestors right there. So yeah, just noticing. And don't miss your life by filling it up. Allow yourself. All of it. And heed Judy's words, bow fully, sit fully, lay down fully, love fully, mess up fully, and dare I say, enjoy it. There's a question, Rain. I have a question.
I like the way you said to go deep. And the first day we took a hike, it was a short walk. And then today it was a longer walk. So my question is, are we doing that every day? Are we going farther on the hike? So we end up in the ocean. And just, it was really exciting to see the heart rock get shared. And it wasn't like we wanted the heart rock. It was like we were excited for the person who found the heart rock. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like when you get the little AA chip and the person puts it around, everybody holds it. It's like we're excited for the person that made that mile to... Anyway, I'm getting off topic, but are we going farther on the hike?
We already went further and further on our hike. We went to Buckeye, yes, and bay leaves and heart rock. We were swimming in it. We were up to our necks in it. Mm-hmm. Also, I can't go any further. I drugged my body through that last portion of that, and I went and took a muscle relaxer and had my feet up like afterwards. Oh, I was in rough shape. I have a spinal injury, and it keeps me humble. it keeps me grounded a lot. Once again, if I didn't have a spinal injury, and if I wasn't deaf, I'd be unstoppable. So I'm kind of glad I have something to remind me that deep is really relative and really near sometimes. Right? But I'd also too like one day to get all the way out to the ocean. I fly thousands of miles to get here. And I see it just over the ridge and go, oh, it's right there. I want to play in it with you.
Yeah. Hi, thank you for the talk. I was thinking about your concept of light all since you started talking about light. I mean, you saw the light come in on Randy and make these shadows. It comes 93 million miles, but light is such a tiny, tiny fraction of light. Honeybee was sitting here looking at that light coming in. It would be a vast spectrum of light. And we see this little tiny bit of light. And then I was thinking about the Suzuki Roshi saying illuminated corner. But if you're giving off light, we give off light as a perfect radiator, we go in all directions. Right? So it wouldn't be a corner, it would just go out. And that got to thinking about, well, if we can't see all this light the people are emitting, maybe that's what helps Zazen and Buddha help us to see light that is actually radiating that I can't see, that I'm totally blind to this light coming. And, you know, I don't know. But maybe that's what part of this is, to try to see this invisible light maybe put polarizers on, you know, like the bees, so we can see these lines coming from each person.
Yeah, we see about 1% of the electromagnetic spectrum. Some beings see a little more, some less. Some to the right of us, some to the left of us, some see infrared, some see ultraviolet. Don't think about radio waves. I don't think about things like this. I'm currently reading this sci-fi novel. I picked it because of the library that I can get on my e-reader will give you staff picks. And I had no idea what the book was about. I didn't even know that it was sci-fi. And I try and read a Dharma book, like basically a study text, a study text from my other field of study, something completely for pleasure. You know, I try and spread it out. I keep about like four different things. So I'm reading this wild sci-fi book. And in the future, they're having these spaceship wars and doing all these crazy things and moving faster than light and doing all these things. So they will jump forward and watch the light of the enemy's ship, where it was, to know where they're going, and all these things. And I'm trying to read this late at night, you know, and I'm just like, okay. I was like, there's like physics diagrams and stuff, you know. And it just makes me think. I see this one little sliver of a thing bounced off a thing, and I say, that's Randy, right over there. But he's leaving this luminous, pervasive spot of autumn for me as well. He doesn't even know it. And it was breaking my heart. And it was right there. Maybe I'm glad I can only see 1%. And it's filtered through the trees and the atmosphere and the and through the Randys of our life and onto the floor. I'd be a wreck. It'd be a wreck if I got to see more of it, maybe. I really don't understand parts of this book I'm reading. I really don't. And that's okay. It's okay. Any other questions or comments?
The metaphor of the ocean that you used, actually, I told you already, I think of you as ocean, not ocean, but ocean. Now I understand a little bit more why I think of you as ocean. When I was a young student, my first teacher who gave me this rakusu, he's poetic, also a calligraphy. And yet, Dharma talk brought something he said back then back to me. He said, the river longs to return to the ocean. And back then I was more silent, more afraid to say. I thought about that off and on for about a year. And we had another session. At the end of that session, we used to have circles. And in the meantime, I was listening to Pete Townsend, who wrote this song called "The Sea Refuses No River." So I switched it to the ocean refuses no river, and that circle became complete for me. And what I realized was that the river and the ocean are both me. I want to be united because I feel separate. But some part of me knows I'm already united. All the muddy waters, the garbage waters, the polluted waters, the fresh snow waters, all of these is what makes the ocean.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, thank you so much. He smiled when I said that. I didn't say all this much. I just said, last year, Roshi said, the river longs to return to the ocean. Now I feel the ocean refuses no river. Just smile.
Yeah. There's nothing I can say that wouldn't just ruin that. If you've seen the Shuso ceremony, the Shuso Hosen, when usually there's a line that's something like, water flows and returns to the sea. It's like we're trying to express that. We're trying to be intimate with that. There's also a line in the ceremony sometimes that says, something like being humble. And I was asked by my teacher to do this, and I feel like a mosquito trying to bite an iron bowl. You know, it goes on with all this supplication and self-flagellating. But then there's a line that says, after the speaker's first official Dharma talk, they say, I hope there's enough water in the ocean to wash out my words from your ears. Yeah. Well, on the East Coast, we actually say, I hope there's enough water in the Atlantic, is the line. And I never thought twice about it, you know, I think I was at City Center and somebody said the Pacific. And I was like, what? Where am I? What is going on? And so I was reflecting on that with a soon-to-be Shuso, soon-to-be student, and he riffed on that line at a ceremony. It's my Dharma brother, Joan. And he said, I hope there's enough water on the Hudson, because we were in New York City, the Hudson, the West. And it's just like, whoa. I don't know if you've ever been near the Hudson. Yeah. But it's that too, right? It's all the waters. Like you said, Akave, it's the garbage waters. It's all of it. It's all of it. Not separate. I saw another hand. Yes, friendly.
You made me aware when you were talking about the shadow, and I realized that I wish I could have seen myself the way that you saw me. And So that makes me wonder sometimes if that others see us much in a greater light than we see ourselves. And so how do we get out of our way so that we can see ourselves as others may see us?
Yeah. Yeah, I think about this a lot. A lot. And I often think it has, for me at least, has to do a lot with changing the relationship I have with myself. And, you know, a couple billion hours of Zazen later, you kind of go, oh, I'm not really nice to myself a lot of the time. Because if the things that were coming up for me were coming up for you, and you sat down and we had a coffee, and you said, this is where I'm stuck, the attention I would give you, the care, the love, the connection I would give you, yeah? Why don't I do that for me? I'm not talking about mindless self-indulgence. I'm talking about basic fucking decency. I'm talking about being human. I'm talking about being compassionate with myself, all of myself, all the things I've gone through and things I've survived. And I got here. I'm here. You know? So if I can meet me the way I can meet you, if I could just be myself a little more that way, you know, like I say, you know, big mind is great. Sure, it's great. We all like swimming in that vast ocean together. But let's talk about kind mind too. Let's be with ourselves. Let's be good to ourselves. I think there's at least half of the world's problems, right? I think that's at least half. It's just our own raging insecurities and unchecked aggression towards ourselves. Yeah. Hogan.
Thanks. As I heard that and I was feeling the truth of it, and I thought, why don't I treat myself with the kind of tender kindness and patience that I would give to my sweetheart or my brother or anyone else? And embedded in that, I found even the way I was asking that question a bit of not treating myself well. And I went back to not 90 minutes ago, I was speaking with someone and she said, I'm reading a book and I'm reading about grief. And I thought of you because of something you said. And here it says something very important, which is the grief process must have witnesses to be complete. So many of our processes need witnesses to be complete. And if we think of ourselves as an island that isn't quite right yet, because I don't treat myself well or whatever, we are perhaps neglecting that we're not an island, that of course we don't have it quite right yet. We can't on our very own. We need one another to remind us of these things over and over. Thank you.
Yeah, how can we continue to be a lamp to ourselves and to others? And compassion, I think, has to play at least part of it. It has to. I just randomly, somebody was asking me the other day, oh, what are three words that you think describe me? I think they were filling out, I don't know, a job application, a dating profile, something. So what are three words? And I looked at this person and I thought, oh, you're this and you're this and that. And they were like, no, really. Isaac, you are loyal. You are tender. You are so wise. And they're like, they just refused to hear what. And I was like, gosh, you're so thick, you know? And then I thought, uh-oh, now do me. That's a little uncomfortable. But it was great. So what I did for the rest of the afternoon is I randomly texted friends and said, can you give me three words that you think describe me? And they went, how about this, this, and this, a little text. And I would text them back what I thought of them in three words. It was so stupid, but it was so great. It was so great. You know, you can just extend that, be a mirror, be a lamp, show people, you know, show people what it is, what you see. It's what Coburn was saying. We don't see that light, but others see it. Others see it. Yeah, John.
First of all, thank you for this wonderful talk. Second of all, I want to take issue with one thing you said. Excuse me. I think, and I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I think you are unstoppable because of your deafness, because of your spinal injury, because of you.
Thanks, Doc.
Those are the things that make all of us unstoppable. The obstruction is the way. And
it is. Yeah.
And the second thing I wanted to say is you said something that I thought it struck me because it's something over the recent past. I've practiced Zen for 20 years now. And it took me a long, long time to figure out that practice is this life. It's not just practice over here and life over here.
Yeah, yeah.
That this is the life. And
yeah. It hits you like a ton of bricks when you do that, though. It's like the bottom falls out of the bucket and you're like, oh, okay.
You got that right.
Yeah. And then you do something silly like shave your head and join the circus, right? Because you don't know how else to do it. Sometimes you feel that and you start making prostrations. That's what I did. Thank you, ancestors. Thank you for being kind. Thank you for being patient. Thank you for trying with me so many different ways. Ethan Dorsey picked up trash. He woke up and immediately started picking up trash. Yeah, I get it, sort of. In my own way, I think I get it. Yeah. I don't know what, I'm completely, Pamela, help me with the schedule. I'm completely lost.
We'll go until everybody's done asking questions. So does Randy have a question?
That's a nice answer. We'll go until everybody is satisfied. Or you know, or maybe not that quite that far. So is there
she wants this to end at some point.
I just don't call me late for dinner, right? You know, that's all I care about. I also want to check in online if there's anything there or any other question in the room. Mizu-san.
I don't know if it's a question, but I just really like the thread of our discussion. It feels open and vulnerable and truthful. And I think touching this part of ourselves that feels rejected, maybe. I think that's why we build this sort of almost like this concrete wall to real compliments, a real seeing into ourselves, maybe. I know for myself, the fear of rejection just comes from having experienced rejection just all my life in some sense, whether it's from myself or from another person who doesn't know how to accept themselves. So it's like you bump into rejection all the time. And so it makes it really difficult to face that and be real with that. And one thing I've discovered over the course of the past year or so is that one thing I've needed to do in order to really love myself instead of reject myself is asking for the help, asking for support.
Mm-hmm.
Being real with that, whether, and it could just be anything, but say something kinder to me, please, or just be with me in this moment where I'm struggling. And that really offers a deeper connection between myself and another person when I do that. And I just start to realize more and more I'm trying to create a space for myself and for others around me where we can be supportive to each other in that way. It's not easy because we're not conditioned for that. We're conditioned to be stalwart and hard and I'm independent. And I can do this on my own. If I can't do this on my own, then there's something wrong with me. And I realize that we're all in this together, all of it, all our awakening, our misery, all of it is together. We're not separate from ourselves. And we can't pretend that. We see that in each other. We see everything. You just pretend we don't see. So as I'm sitting on the cushion, I'm seeing everything about myself. And just to sit with that can be really, really hard. But what I find is that when I'm sitting and sessioning with others, I automatically feel so much stronger because everyone here is doing the thing that is so necessary, just to be here now with all that is, whatever it is. I think that's all I have to say. I don't know if that's a question.
Yeah, we realize ourselves in community. We realize ourselves against each other. Dogen said, you know, the best way to wash a potato is against another potato. Right? We didn't teach the cooks, but he's not talking about the rice and the potatoes this morning. He's talking about the way we get clean is by rubbing up against each other, by seeing that, by feeling it. It's falling down sometimes, but I struggled with that. What you spoke to a lot, I personally had a really hard time asking for help. And part of that was kind of like by design. Growing up with disabilities, you're often attached to the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation or the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation or something like that. There's just OVRDB, there's some acronym like that. Your state, whatever it's called. I forget what it's called in California. But it's like, I'm going to do all my classes and going to go to audio therapy and speech therapy and occupational therapy. I'm going to do all these things. And it was drilled in for me is to appear as normal as possible. Mm-hmm. Not take up any room, not draw any attention to myself, to just be as independent as possible. Do that for the first 20 years. And then I spent the next 20 years undoing all of that. Be as interdependent as possible. Be as understanding of that. But that gets really drilled into your head. Exactly what you're talking about. That was a really challenging thing for me to stop and ask for help. It was so hard, unreasonably hard. Like, I worked at it for a long time. And one of the things that broke through for me was one of my teachers saying, she was watching an interaction I had with somebody else and said, "Why did you do that?" And of course I said, "Do what?" Because I wasn't even aware of it at this point. I had ingrained it into my being. Why didn't you let them help you when you needed help? I said, I guess I did. And she said, "Don't rob them of an opportunity to serve." Okay. I mean, it was so on its head at that point. It was so upside down for me that constantly not wanting to be a burden on other people was perhaps not working for me or for them. And certainly in the kind of culture, society, and practice, and in the more micro kind of the relationships I have and the practice centers that I call home, it's not the kind of places I want to be. It's not the kind of relationships I want to have. Plus, I need a lot of help. So, there's a weird little quote, and I think you'll understand. It's in my marginalia. Yes. The Dharma talk today is brought to you by the word marginalia and the letter L. And triangles or something. So I was reading this book about creativity, which is one of my big things as an artist and a psychotherapist and an art psychotherapist, really looking at how creativity heals and all these other things. And this author was talking about creativity in general and talking about how every time he would learn a cool new technique for art making or making in general or building things, he immediately has a practice of showing everybody in his workshop to show them what he figured out, how he did it. Because he recognizes many people do in makerspaces and artists and in other fields as well, and cooking, I'm not going to share the secret sauce. Because if I shared my technique, then I would lose some of my hold. I would lose my little corner of the market, right? And the author's response to that was, every success is a shared success. And every shared success is an endorsement in the culture that produced that success in the first place. Right?
Yeah.
That's Zen. That's what we're trying to do. Where, but it's not me, mine, and all this other tricks and traps of the ego, So same goes with help. Same goes with vulnerability. So tip your cards, show them what you need, show them where you do what, what it is, and say, I've had so many conversations where I've said, look, I'm upset with you right now. I want you to know I'm upset with you, and it has very little to do with you. It has to do with something else that is not you, but I'm still upset with you, and I need to talk with you about it. I guarantee you that conversation goes 10 times better, 10 times faster, and you'll feel 10 times more connected, Thumbs up. Mm-hmm. Okay, we really must be over time. No? Okay.
We can keep going.
Okay. We had Anton first, I think, and then Pamela too.
Thank you. I was thinking for a very long time that what's important for me is to love and to kind of like long for the ocean. And what I'm hearing from you today and from Kavi and Lisa and everyone that's kind of like, you know, sharing this thoughts today, that it's also very, very important to be loved. And how the ocean is not designed to not accept any river. It's not possible for the ocean to not accept. So I think that's kind of like what makes us, that we also want not just to be, not just longing for the ocean, but for the ocean to accept us as well. So it's kind of like, you know, it's going in two directions. So that's it for me, just a comment.
Yeah, like the Hudson River is not a river. It's a tidal estuary or something like that, or something like that. It flows in both directions, which is why it's so full of no, but it everything that we do has to flow in both directions. So if we want more love in our life, I, you know, feel I want to be more loved right now. So the answer for me quite often is to give more love. If I give more love, I get it back. So when I'm feeling that, I know that that river has to flow in both directions. It has to. So it's hard because it means I have to be vulnerable and all these other things. But it's worth the squeeze, you know. It's worth it, I think. Do I miss Sister Pamela?
Questions, son.
Hey.
Thank you for the wonderful talk. I'm very interested in this little door you've opened about the way we speak to ourselves. I've noticed the same. And I've also noticed, and actually during this retreat, my friend pointed out to me, the mirror that she is, that I would not accept a compliment. And I'm suspicious of compliments, not because they may or may not be true, but because I'm not sure they have anything to do with me. And I have resolved this into a very dualistic way of managing, which is my self-talk has to be kind. You know, else I have nothing to lose by being kind to myself. But when people reflect something at me, I don't know who they're talking about because it may have nothing to do with me truly, right? It could be a projection. It's the sliver that they see. And what I think is important is not what they think of me or what I think of them, but the thing that we make together, which you and I have been making together for a while, and what I'm doing with everybody here and everybody's doing back with me. And I think that's the transmission of light as well, that we can at some point forget about who Mariko is and who Pamela is and who Tess and Ocean, who all of us are separately, and just like swim in the light of each other, because that's where it's coming from. You know, it's coming, it's what Anton said. It's the mutuality of every moment that is the light, seems to me. And I'm not denying that I've got something to offer or that you have something to offer. I know you do. But it seems like it doesn't happen separately, that it's in this space. And so that's my little way of dealing with my incredible discomfort with compliments.
I have a question. I'm not clear on what you're saying in terms of how you're experiencing it. Because I almost sense like the discomfort is coming from either you're not valuing it because you're suspicious of the way they view you. But if that's true, then it seems that you can't help but look at yourself in that same way, because how we look at others is how we see ourselves. It's the same eye that sees them is the same eye that sees me. So then it brings up the question of maybe you're even suspicious of your own how you see yourself.
I hear you.
Oh.
But I will say this. My suspicion is not that there's anything wrong or untrue. I'm just saying I can't say it's right or wrong. There's another way of saying it is that there's not a truth or a falsity in there for me to grab onto and say, oh yeah, that's me, all right. I can't. It's just not, there's nothing grabbable about me. There's nothing grabbable about you to me either, Randy. In any moment, you're a different Randy for me. So what am I going to grab to? Am I supposed to grab onto, you know, what's, I do see that someone sees me this way and I hope they really enjoy it. But I don't identify with it like it's mine. I don't know how to describe that. Maybe someone can help me.
So when somebody gives you a compliment, you feel like they could be talking about somebody else?
I think they might be talking about themselves. That they see in me, they could only see in me, but somehow is really the light in them. That's the only way they could see that in me. And so I often tell people not often, but occasionally with people that I trust, I will say, you know, what you're saying about me is also about you. Because it seems to me that they wouldn't be able to say it to me if they didn't know it in themselves really strongly. I see how they're going this.
I have a story. So after practicing with Angie for a few months, it was at the end of a Tuesday night, and I had a chance to speak with her briefly. And I was just like filled with her light. And I told her that. I said, Angie, you're just radiating light. And she said, you wouldn't know it if you didn't have it yourself.
Exhibit A.
Yeah, perfect. Maybe we overemphasize who said what or who did what. I know we do. We're conditioned to account for who did this, who did that. As individuals, we put tags and timestamps on things, but there is a way to look at the co-creation of a moment, of a feeling. If it has arisen, take a step back and go, do I have to label where it originated? Who's the one that made it happen? Or can I just go, oh my God, what a gift.
Yeah.
This is what's present. It could not be present if I were not here.
It was a gift.
And I have one. If, And something else came to me that I want to share. It's it goes back to what Ocean said about someone reminding him that to give people a chance to be of service. And combined with that, you know, the importance of us expressing our love for other people and that other and others expressing love for us in some way. And I'm reminded of something that I've said before, but I saw something else too, which is, you know, we mustn't wait until we know we can love perfectly before we start to love. And the corollary that arose today is that if the love coming toward, be careful to not reject the love that's coming at you because it ain't the perfect love you think you need right now. Find what's in it. It's there. So that's what I wanted to share.
That's a beautiful moment. Thank you.
And Ocean, this came to me all because of this, because of your talk about reframing the way we put ourselves in the portrait until it's not us anymore. And like, this is for me, the beautiful message, which is it's really not about me. It's about it all the time. This thing that you very clearly and poetically spoke about not separating and all the time. Not just here.
And remember, Pamela, you're in the soup too.
I'm in the soup. You couldn't be here without me, and I couldn't be here without you.
So if I say how beautiful you are, I really mean it.
Angie's saying what Suzuki Roshi said, whenever somebody brought him a gift, you say, you're so beautiful. Suzuki Roshi would say, no, it's you who's so beautiful. But I kind of disagreed. Actually, in my heart, I always felt like if somebody really wants to get that across to you, accept it.
I know, Kavi, but
complete. No, I'm not. I'm sorry.
Don't you think it's Roshi between us? It's not me or mine.
Well, that kind of gets conceptual for me.
Here.
I'm not fighting you. I'm talking to Suzuki Roshi, which I can't. You know. I wish he was here to answer me,
He's here.
You know, but anyway, I talk, okay, there's something really from my heart I want to say. I know for myself, from my own experience, and I've seen it over time, you know, I've lived almost 60 years, so I've seen it, that it seems like in life, we're all trying to hide our ugly side from each other. We are all trying to, even in a spiritual place, we're trying to show our love, show our good side. It goes for me, certainly. You know, and I'll say where it goes for me. Even the comment that I made because I was carried away with River Long Street, all that stuff happened. All that stuff did happen. But if I really saw that I'm the ocean, if I really felt that I'm the ocean consistently, I don't think I would be here. So what I'm trying to say is the odd thing is that when we share our ugly side with each other, especially in a safe place like this, it actually brings us together because we see that we all share that so-called ugly stuff. And in a way is our beauty. Not that the ugly stuff is beautiful, but to disclose it, to shine the light on it, because that's the truth. And we all share that vulnerability. We all want to be loved. We all want to be valued. So if someone comes to me, like my sister Pamela's told me today, someone compliments and I don't accept it, I'm breaking something.
Yeah.
I just went off on a limb, you know.
Yeah. I mean, when I was working on koans with students in my last lineage, and there was something they were supposed to identify or bring forth in the koan that had to do with brokenness or making a mistake or something like that. It was like, well, that's me. I see that. Okay. And we kind of like there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. We kind of like that because it speaks to that vulnerability, that messy side that a part of us. And you know where students tripped up all the time, from my experience, was it would say, bring me the 16-foot golden body of the Buddha. It looked high and low. They could not find it. They couldn't find it. They would look and they would look and they would look and they would get exasperated. It's you. I can see myself as a chipped cup. I can't see myself that way. That's ego. That's a sticking point in your practice, in my practice. It's just saying, okay, I'm more comfortable with this than I am with that. I choose this. I reject that. Great ways without difficulty. Avoid picking and choosing. Just go straight ahead on the path with 99 curves, as they say. That's hard to do. Because there's 99 curves. And I have a story about them. Let's just go straight ahead. Just go straight ahead. 16-foot golden body. Bring that forth for me. You know what that looks like?
Yeah, it looks like you.
You beat me to it. Looks like Pamela.
That looks like you.
Anyway, yeah. And that's what it looks like. That's what it looks like. It looks like this. It looks like this. That's what it is. That's what we're here to realize. Oh, it's hard. You just got to stop separating from it. All of it, right? Okay.
Okay, I've got to let you off the hook.
I'm going to.
You're amazing.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you for your practice. Thank you for attending to this talk. Thank you for taking it to heart. And let's keep going. Yes.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.